Welcome to the Wealthy, Wealthy, Wise podcast. If you would like to listen in on thought-provoking conversations with countercultural thought leaders and experts in the fields of wealth, health, and relationships, the three keys to having what I call a wealthy, wealthy life, then this is the show for you. I'm Christina Wise, real estate investor, best-selling author of Falling for Money, and founder of Wealthy Wealthy, where I serve as your personal guide to money, health, and happiness. Welcome back. This is Christina Wise, your host. In this episode, I interview Jonathan Levi. Jonathan was introduced to me through some mutual friends, and I'm so happy for the connection. Jonathan is a successful entrepreneur of a multi-million dollar adult learning business. He's the podcast host of the Superhuman Academy podcast, the best-selling author of his newest book, The Only Skill That Matters. He's also authored the books Unlimited Memory and Become a Super Learner. I had so much fun talking with Jonathan. We were finishing each other's sentences by the end. We talk about the biggest failures of aspiring entrepreneurs. We chat about the difference between income and wealth and how to take big risks without betting the farm. He offers tips and techniques for how to learn a new skill fast, as well as how to improve your memory as a top business skill you could use to earn more money in your business. Jonathan's personal mission is to empower 1 million people worldwide to live their best lives as a result of being an expert learner as opposed to an information collector. Please enjoy my conversation with Jonathan Levi. Oh my goodness. I am so looking forward to this conversation. So thank you for being on the Wealthy Wealthy podcast.
Thank you for having me, Christina. I'm really happy to be here.
So you lived in Silicon Valley for a long time. Then you moved on the other side of the world. Tell us a little bit about that. Tell us, who the hell are you and what inspired you to leave Silicon to move to Tel Aviv?
Yeah. So I'm Jonathan Levi, and I'm still surprised at the fact that I'm an expert in accelerated learning, memory, speed reading, and online courses. So learning is kind of my thing. Growing up, I was always an entrepreneur, as I think one has to be in Silicon Valley, right? All the cool kids are entrepreneurs. I was not one of the cool kids, but fortunately, I discovered entrepreneurship, and that really saved me from not thinking that I could do anything. I struggled a lot academically and socially, and entrepreneurship really quite literally saved my life. It was the first thing I discovered that I was really good at that gave me self-esteem, and I started wondering, well, what else could I be good at? But Silicon Valley was not my happy place. And more importantly, I did not like the kind of person I was in Silicon Valley, because I defined myself more, and I'm still guilty of this, but I defined myself almost exclusively by my accomplishments. And here it's a little bit easier to define yourself by more. I find people care more about the contents of your heart and mind here than about the contents of your pocket. Or your, in this case, VC funded bank account in Silicon Valley. And I just liked who I was more. I felt like I was a happier person, a more social person, a less materialistic person. So I came here, gave it a try, fell in love with Tel Aviv, and tried to move back to Silicon Valley after business school. I made it 2 months and I was just miserable. I was miserable with the climate. I got sucked back into startup land and raising money land. And I was like, this isn't who I want to be anymore or what I want to do. So I came to Tel Aviv with no idea what I was going to do. Absolutely no idea. And took 6 months to kind of find myself. And along the way decided, well, I could do this little side project of online courses. I'd taken some private tutoring in memory techniques and speed reading. And I figured, you know, I've got some other stuff, pots in the fire and some rental income, and I'd sold a business, and if I could just make like $1,000 a month, that would sustain me and I would have unlimited runway to find the next big project. And that side project, online courses, blew up. And so now we have 250,000 students worldwide, 3.5 million podcast downloads, 3 books, one of which is the number 2 best-selling book right now on neuroscience on Amazon, which is crazy. So I don't know about you, Christina, but I totally ended up here by accident or divine providence.
So what courage to leave the status quo, to leave that adrenaline, that atmosphere, and be able to say, that's not for me, and just radically uproot your life and start over somewhere brand new. So big kudos to you. I mean, how
Thank
many
you.
People maybe dream of that, but don't actually ever do it?
You know, I will say it was steps. It wasn't a one-day thing. It was, you know, going back to the 2000 election and being disappointed as a young person and being like, well, you know, one day I'm going to be able to vote and then we'll see. And then being disappointed again in subsequent elections and being like, you know, this might not be the place that shares my values. I also spoke Hebrew. So it was, I had a softer landing. I came here on an internship program. So it wasn't, I think a lot of times people look at entrepreneurs or people who've made big changes and they think it's just this big moment of bravery, but it's not. It's a lot of little moments of bravery. Like, okay, well, maybe I'll just spend a few months here and check that out. Or maybe I'll just go to this one conference and then you meet, you know, it's a lot of little moments that culminate in a big effect. But thank you. I mean, in retrospect, yes, but at the time it just felt like doing what was right for me.
Yeah, right for you. And, you know, there's a courage built into there when, into that when nobody else is doing that, but you feel right. Very called that this is what you're supposed to do. So breaking away is courage. And then there's also the piece I hear as well that I've been talking a lot more about. And it's the faith piece where, you know what? I'm just going on faith and I know right. What I know. I kind of know what I don't know, but I'm willing to have faith that my heart, my intuition is telling the truth and I'm going right. To follow this, not even knowing what I'm going to do, not even know if I can make money, probably scared shitless in a way totally. Of what am I doing because nobody else is doing this. Totally. And then it's really gone to prove itself, hasn't it? That you're probably like in the grind and in that competitive energy and trying to measure up and trying to be enough compared to all the zeros everybody else is making and right. How much VC capital. And you're just like, screw that. I'm just going to go simplify. Maybe it's the right choice. Maybe it isn't, but I'm going to have faith. And you didn't even know what you're going to do. And now thing you know, your probably business has blown up like X.
Bigger than I had thought for sure.
By getting out of that other energy and being more in a faith energy and I'm just going to go do good work, right?
Totally. And I think you ever hear that saying, trust but verify? It's like trust but verify. So my thing is like, take chances, but have a safety net. So whenever I take a chance, I'm always like, well, what's my backup plan here? You know? And at the time it was, okay, I'll do this little online course thing. And then I was flying back and forth to Africa, looking at startups serving the base of the pyramid. Like what technologies can we take from Israel, this amazing innovative country, and use to empower people. I flew a couple times to Russia to figure out like what kind of opportunities were there. So it was kind of a trust, but verify. It was like, take leaps of faith, but build these side projects. And I had a little software company at the time so that, you know, because I think a lot of entrepreneurship is anxiety management. It's like, okay, I'm losing sleep at night because I'm not sure how I'm going to pay my rent. Like what, how do we deal with that? And then free ourselves so that, you know, I can rationally go about making decisions. And that was a big thing for me in a few different stages in my life where I was like, I'm not really sure what I'm going to do, but I'll engineer situations that manage my anxiety.
Ooh, that's really good. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. And what you said here is so important in that I coach a lot of entrepreneurs. I've been in business for a long time. And like you, you know, you have your successes, you have your abysmal failures, and that's all built into the
overall experience. Sometimes in the same day.
And sometimes in the same day, right. But I do see so many entrepreneurs. They do. It's like all chips in. They risk everything and there is no safety net. And that's, you know, and right. Entrepreneurs have this automatic tolerance, high tolerance to risk.
Right.
But it is that. It's like, yes, let's take great risks, but not at the cost of everything. Like, how right. do you build the safety nets? What are these other things? And it sounds like you've been a pretty savvy investor. You've built some other passive income and streams that gave you some freedom and flexibility to take these leaps of faith. So can you exactly. talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So when I was very young, my parents gave me really, really good advice, which was at the time I thought I was going to go to Stanford MBA. That didn't work out. But they told me that like you should buy real estate. Throwing money into rent is a huge waste. And they had, you know, most of their wealth had been accumulated through their home, their primary residence. And so I thought it was a good idea. And I bought this house when I was 22 years old from the proceeds of my last company and just saving up and not spending. And I made more money on that, Christina, accidentally than up until about 2017 than my businesses. And I was like, that's interesting. You know, in this whole principle of leverage, which I really got beaten into me in business school, like the power of leverage. It's like you put in X, which is some small number that a 22-year-old kid saved up from, you know, his little side business selling luxury car parts, believe it or not. And then all of a sudden you have this big number now. I just sold that house a couple of weeks ago. And you're like, wow, I should do that again. So I've spent actually the last 6 months right now educating myself. People always ask me, what am I learning? Because I'm the learning guy. And I think they imagine that I'm going to come out with some Elon Musk type, yeah, I'm learning astrophysics, which I did for a while. It was super interesting. But I've come down to earth literally and metaphorically and started to learn things like how to better run my business. So the last 6 months I've spent learning about commercial real estate investing and getting into this big scary world, because I've bought two homes in the past in two different countries, but never a commercial. It's a totally different ballgame. There's different lingo, there's different players, you need a team. And so it was literally like starting over again as an entrepreneur in a totally different field. Like if I were starting in medical devices almost. And I realized very quickly, like I'm buying a business and I need to understand the players. What do I need on my staff? So I spent 6 months learning, and knock on wood, in the next couple of weeks, I'll be closing on an awesome commercial property. So I've, at every point in my life, and I think this comes back to the whole learning thing, at every point in my life when I've faced a challenge, I've been kind of called to learn, whether that's being single for 9 years and not knowing what I need to do to get into a healthy relationship. Thank goodness I'm now married. Whether that's building this business, building a remote workforce, creating online courses, podcasting, books, moving to a new country and not understanding the laws, the rules, the banking system. Every time that I've had one of these challenges, it's been a matter of what do I need to learn in order to thrive in this environment and this challenge. And commercial real estate was just the most recent one where I was like, oh my, I would look at listings. I didn't even understand the terms on the paper, you know, and now I'm very comfortable and confident. So
I love that. So you said so much there. That's really awesome. And I want to pull out some of what you said. It really is aligned with so much of what I teach when it comes to money. And one is this, it's the idea that money and wealth are very different. So our income and wealth. Mm-hmm. Now, and you're just, when you're telling your story, you're giving an illustration through your story of the difference between the two, because you're over here building your business that is your learning business and your coaching, mm-hmm. and what you're doing and selling your products and programs and coaching. And that's making an income. And like you said, all you want to do is make like $1,000 a month for a while. And right. Now it's blown up to whatever your income is that comes out of that business. What your safety net, however, was passive income from investments that actually paid for a good cost of your lifestyle, that it gave you the freedom to be able to go build this new business, to go move to another country, to take some of the calculated risks that you've mentioned.
Bingo.
So you're doing both. You're over here still investing, taking a part of your earnings from what you're making from your business income, and now investing it, taking the fact that you've sold some properties. Now you're reinvesting that money probably to put into this commercial building to even have better returns and use the old, that money that was the appreciation that's reinvested to buy even bigger opportunities on the investment side. So you're in two businesses, and that's what I teach. And I want to delve into more of the learning piece, but people are so afraid of investing. Like they want to be great entrepreneurs and make big incomes, but I don't want to know anything about investing. I just want to abdicate, or I'm just going to put all my eggs into my income, or outsource it, or just not worry about that and just hope my business income is all I need.
Which is crazy.
And it's crazy. Thank you for saying that. So it's crazy. Like that's the message I want to try to get through. Is like,
oh my
your
God,
business
I have so
owner
much.
You're two businesses. I actually say three businesses. One is your income business, right. which is your business that makes income. The second one is your household business,
Bingo.
Where you manage your household finance in a way
Bingo.
That gives you extra money, that then you have your investing business that you're an investor, and you're in all three business. You're actually the business owner of three businesses. If you're going to blow out this lifestyle wealth and to be able to live a good life. So
we are going to be friends. We are going to be good friends. My wife at first, because her father was an entrepreneur, so she's used to it a little bit, but she had a hard time with all the comparisons that I would draw. And I really look at a family. I mean, a family is an organizational unit with an end. and the end is to produce X, where X is healthy children, in my opinion, healthy, emotionally well-grounded children who are positive contributors to society. That's how I look at a family. And, you know, to produce happy people, I guess I would say not just children, but the husband and wife should also be happy, or husband or wife and wife or whatever. It's exactly a business. I mean, the exact techniques that I go and learn from Strategic Coach, they're perfect when you plug them into a household. And I so agree on the component of kind of people just want to invest. A long, long time ago, someone told me, and I think it's a quote from Warren Buffett, never invest in something you don't understand. And I went to business school to try and understand more about corporate finance and the stock market. And I had a professor there, Pierre Hillion, who wrote the book on stock buybacks. And he's like, yeah, no, you know, the stock market, as we all know, is kind of bullshit. It's legalized gambling. And I was like, that's interesting. If the experts feel that way, and you know, you start understanding like how shorts work and how algorithmic trading works, and you realize no one actually understands what the hell's going on, right? Like the most sophisticated quants in the world are like, oh yeah, the algorithm does it. I was like, I should not be investing in this asset class because I do not understand it. I understand Bitcoin phenomenally well. I spent 6 months research Bitcoin. I get Bitcoin, which is very complicated. I don't get the stock market in all its fluctuations and strange behavior and, you know, shorts and calls and all this crazy stuff. I don't get it. So I don't invest a lot in it. And I think so many entrepreneurs just shuffle their money off to a financial advisor and say like, oh, I have people deal with that. It's like, well, do you understand what you're paying, and do you understand what you're invested in, and do you actually understand what's going on in those index funds? And most people don't. And again, I have an MBA. I should understand this, and I'm admitting openly that I understand this much, you know? So I'm very passionate about investing. And by the way, it could be anything, you know what I mean? If you believe in startups and you get startups because that's your world and you're a tech entrepreneur, go invest in startups. But I definitely don't believe in this like outsourcing your investment to things that you don't understand. So.
Oh my goodness. Thank you for saying that. So, I have some backup here. Nice. So let's go into your expertise, your genius, which is learning and the skill of learning, mm-hmm. not just, and there's different, like I think in this day and age of information, like people think they're learning when they're listening to a podcast right. or they're going to a workshop or whatever the case is. And it's almost this, I don't know, this belief that we know more than we know. And right. understanding and actually having skill, having learned something and be able to have applied skill to produce desirable intentional outcomes is very different than, I mean, it's, we know something when we can do that knowledge and act with it to produce the results we're looking for. Just listening to things, I don't think it's just more in and more stuff that creates more anxiety. Totally. So what do you have to say about that? Let's delve into learning a little bit. What is learning, and where do you think people are not learning, and what can they do to change it?
Ooh, well, so Alvin Toffler said that the illiterate of the 21st century are not those who can't read and write; it's those who can't learn, unlearn, and relearn. And I love that, also because the unlearn part. Because how many doctors do we know? It's almost a cliche, right? The 60-year-old doctor who's been the most respected person in his or her field for decades, but they can't keep up with the times and they're prescribing medication. I think there was a movie about this where the doctor prescribed a medication. They're like, they don't even make that anymore, man. Like, when did you go to med school? 1920? Like, it's not legal in this country. And it's true of every field, right? It's in programming, like, if you graduated from Stanford School of Electrical Engineering and Computer Science 10 years ago, everything you know is useless. Like, there was no Swift or AngularJS 10 years ago. And that's becoming true of more and more fields. It started with medicine, and then it was technology, and now even like political science. Holy crap. That is changing so fast right now, thanks to current political leaders. But political science is a different game today than it was 10 years ago. And it's happening in every single field. And in my book, I talk about why is that happening? And it's because I actually have a beautiful thing. It's because we have more educated people on the planet than ever before, creating that change, doing the research and contributing, and the gates have come down. Today, anyone like yourself or me can be a publisher. So we can produce information, whereas 20 years ago, nobody would give me, I don't know about you, maybe you, but no one would have given me a microphone 20 years ago. And today I can put out information every single week. And so there is this explosion of information, but we need to know, number one, how to choose our information, how to know who to listen to and what to believe, to think for ourselves, which I think is, without getting political, such an important skill right now. Like, how do we evaluate information and choose the sources of our information wisely and also fact check, but to be able to unlearn as well. Everything we know about a political candidate can change tomorrow. Everything we know about a beloved childhood comedian can change tomorrow. So, and that's just in our pop culture. I mean, imagine what's happening in medicine, in science. Oh my goodness. A few years ago, they discovered the God particle, changed everything. Gravitational waves. All of a sudden, everyone who learned Newtonian physics was already wrong. But everyone who learned Einsteinian physics, now they have to go back and reevaluate and learn about gravitational waves. That's crazy. That's crazy. And it's happening faster and faster. There isn't a telescoping nature of evolution. So to me, it's all about, not only can you learn quickly and effectively, can you unlearn quickly and effectively, and can you change your worldview at the turn of a dime? And I'm so glad to be talking to your audience as well, Christina, because we know that learners are earners, right? And people in your podcast are interested about how they can make an impact and make an incredible living. Well, you better be learning real quick, because if you're not, whoever else out there is looking at the market opportunities, they are.
Absolutely. I love that. So you said how to choose what we're learning, what we're listening to, who the source is, like, who is it that we're listening to? Then you said, think for yourself. That's so big, because people just regurgitate what they've heard. They haven't fact checked. It's not their thinking. It's somebody else's. So think for yourself. That's huge. And then unlearn. Did I miss anything?
No, that's it. I mean, those are my general thoughts on learning. We can get deep into techniques and how we actually go about learning faster and remembering more. One technique that I do want to share with people is this brilliant idea I actually got from a software instructor when I was learning some programming, and he calls it brute force learning. So when you try to hack into a computer, the way you do it is you attack it from many different angles. You look for all the vulnerabilities. It's called to brute force a system, right? How can you force your way in? And he reapplied this concept to learning, which is like, okay, I want to learn about something, whether that's a programming language, a musical instrument, a language. Too many people, as you said, right, they just take the facts as they are and then regurgitate them. They learn it linearly from one source. But actually, the people who are experts, the people who really adapt and implement knowledge, are people who learn it from 20 different sources. They listen to a podcast, they go to a lecture, they talk to people about it, they watch the news, they read 3 different books on it. And so if I impress one thing upon people, it's we need to get rid of this idea that we learn through the school system, that there's one textbook and just read that and you'll know what you need to know, because that does a couple terrible things. One, it assumes that the way that the textbook explains it is the way that the student's going to understand it, which, who knows, it's the luck of the draw, right? I needed to be taught different ways when I was in classes, and I had to go and research myself. Number two, it convinces people that if they don't understand it the first time, something's wrong with them, because we're only going to read this chapter once and we're going to move on, or we're only going to watch this documentary once and we're going to move on. And there are a lot of people sitting there going, I don't really understand. And those people need to know it's okay if you don't understand the first time. You know, no one goes out and performs heart surgery after the first time of watching it be done. So it is okay. It is encouraged, if you really want to learn something, to learn it from as many different sources as possible.
Yeah, that's so true. And I agree, and important. And how much do you attribute also? So one thing with the digital age we're in, and when we can do online learning, let's say, for example, and online learning is big. But what I found, because I have online learning programs, and so many people will make the investment, but they won't complete. So they'll pay a big price tag to learn from me, but they won't complete the work. And so I've made adjustments, because I can't create transformation in people's lives if they don't finish the semester, right? You can't just do the first 90 days, and when it's a 180-day semester, and think you're going to be able to get all the knowledge you need, assuming you could get it in that time frame. So what I see is missing is is conversation, is the reciprocal nature of conversation. Because I know that's, even if I'm looking at my 20 different sources in my skill set, and I'm always learning, and I'm always listening and unlearning and growing from things that I thought were true before. It's like a new piece of information changes everything. So a couple different things. It's, for me, it's one that even though we maybe graduate to a certain expertise, the learning's never done. It's like what you're saying with doctors. Like, I went to med school and I've been doing this, so I have all I need. Versus, no, we're always in the practice. There's no place where you know everything.
Yes.
One. So it's like this desire to constantly be learning, to constantly challenge myself. Is like, what do I not know? Or what do I think I know that's just bullshit that, you know, that is built in somewhere because I learned it. So the unlearning piece is big too. But also where I know where things really blow my mind even today in my own expertise is having conversations with others,
listening,
having this conversation with you where you say something like, wow, the way he said that is just brilliant. Like, that was really good. I never thought about it that way. So where are we missing that? Or how important do you think having conversations or community still is in the process?
It's huge. So there are five different, in 1955, a guy named Malcolm Knowles, who devoted his entire life to understanding how adults learn, he came out with five different requirements for adult learning. They include things like pressing need, right? So if an adult doesn't feel like they're going to use something immediately, which is probably what's happening to a lot of online learners, immediate applicability, they need to harness prior knowledge. There's a bunch of different requirements, problem solution, all this different stuff, right? And for years and years and years, this has been the bane of my existence because people invest a lot in our programs and they often don't finish. The ones who do get incredible results. And we've done everything, Christina. We've added worksheets. We added a game server. We actually hired developers, built a game server for our students so they could practice their memory and train all these crazy techniques that we teach. We tried accountability pods. We tried just increasing the price. And it all made little incremental changes. Now what we've been trying, I've spent the last 5 months training certified coaches. So, and the coaches are not reteaching our method. The coaches are there to hold people accountable to their goals. So every week they're going to hop on a call with you. And exactly as you said, it's the human element. It's someone actually taking an interest and saying, well, explain to me what you learned and how are we going to apply this week? And if I'm honest, I think a big part of that, that hits off the pressing need and immediate applicability. When someone's holding you accountable, that's pretty pressing. But I think there's also a huge element of like social capital there, right? Like, you've committed to another human being, and it's the easiest person in the world to let down is yourself. Whereas if you have a coach, someone in a position of authority. So I carved out, after finishing the book, while we were waiting for publishing and approvals and editing and all this other stuff, I carved out 5 months, which I think from talking to me, you can probably understand that I don't spend my time very, willy-nilly, I guess I would say, but I carved out 5 to 6 months just to train these 20 plus people because we're experiencing the same thing in our courses. And we use all kinds of crazy ninja learning mechanics to get people sucked in. Like, I've done the research and spent the time, and Nir Eyal is a good friend of mine, and we've done everything we can to make our products habit forming. But at some point you need that human element.
Yeah, it's a human element. And how much is like the real desire to learn? Like, I'm committed to solving this problem by learning this thing, or if it's learning an instrument that I absolutely positively want to learn this instrument. So I'm going to do the work. It's as though people, like, they think if they buy something, there's a magic pill. And by virtue of buying it, then somehow through osmosis, even if they started, they're going to get the result, and they're disappointed if they don't, versus like this true desire and seriousness in a regard of like, I want to learn this. I want to get good at it. I want to understand it. I want to be able to apply this learning to change something about my life.
Right. And I think I've been really heavily influenced in the last year by a lot of the different research around willpower or lack thereof. And we're always discovering new stuff. I mean, only recently they started to disprove these studies around decision fatigue. And so, as I said, we just did a challenge for our mastermind with Nir Eyal on the concept of indistractable, which is his latest book. And a good friend of mine, Benjamin Hardy, who wrote Willpower Doesn't Work. And so I read all these books and I've really started to understand that the modern world is not set up for us to actually do the things that we want to do. It's like, everybody wants, I think to some extent, everybody wants to be fit and healthy and happy in their body. And yet over 50% of Americans are obese. So something is wrong with our environment as well. And I think with online learning, people definitely want to complete our courses, but Facebook is an addictive beast of a creature. And so is Instagram and Snapchat. And there's always something vying for our attention. So I think a big part of it, and we actually built a course on this, and we now recommend people take that before they take the other course. A big part of it is just stripping away the distraction, which is kind of, we talked a little bit about choosing and narrowing down your information sources. But like, I have systems that just don't allow me to be a misbehaved little Jonathan and browse Facebook. Like if I wanted to, during my book launch, when I should be on social media responding to people on Instagram, I can't. My phone locks me out after 15 minutes and someone on my team goes on and answers the questions. So I think a lot of people make the mistake of relying on willpower. Willpower doesn't work, not in this world. And I would argue even in like our ancestral times, willpower doesn't work. It's not there.
Yeah, no, it's so true. And really in every category of life and the accountability piece, you know, on that note, a lot of people will say, wow, you're just so fit and healthy. And man, you must just love exercise because I exercise regularly. It's like, no. I have an accountability partner. Like I show up, I have a friend that meets me at yoga. I have a friend that meets me at the other workout, or it's I huge. Have a coach that even though maybe I might have more quote unquote willpower than the, say, an average person, I don't know whether I do or I don't, but let's pretend I did. That doesn't matter. Like I can talk myself out of exercise every single day, but the fact that I've built in these accountability systems is the only reason why.
I totally agree. Yeah.
It's not because of me.
He calls them forcing functions. And I love it. You know, it's this idea of like prepay for the workouts. You'll show up. You'll show up and don't keep Häagen-Dazs in the freezer because you will eat it. If it's there,
yeah, I'll eat the whole chocolate bar.
Oh, I totally will. We have a saying in our household, which is we don't sleep with the enemy. It's like we can have that stuff outside when we're celebrating at a restaurant, whatever. It doesn't cross through the doors. It drives my father-in-law crazy. He's like, there's nothing sweet in this damn house. Like, yep.
Yeah, for a reason. Exactly. Well, let's talk about how important is memory? So a lot of people, you hear them say things like, oh, I have a terrible memory, or I can't remember names, or I'm not a good learner because I can't memorize, or wow, I'm getting older. And so memory goes with age. Mm-hmm. So how important is memory, one, in learning, and then two, just in day-to-day life?
Yeah,
success.
I love that question so much, Christina. Memory gets a really bad rap. Because when we think of memory, we think of rote memorization, but there's no learning without memory. I mean, everything that you claim to know has to come from somewhere. And I think that the practice of mnemonics or learning to memorize is just about ways of getting that into your brain faster, whether that's people's names or foreign languages or historical dates or whatever it may be, laws. I helped my wife study for the bar exam. One way or another, things need to get into your long-term memory. And for thousands of years, we've known that there are better ways to do this. And yet somehow, possibly because of the Catholic Church, historians aren't completely sure, this information was suppressed from human beings. But every single person in the audience, regardless of whether or not they think they have a lousy memory, I always like to tell people, unless you have had severe brain trauma, I can teach you to memorize 150 people's names in half an hour. I can teach you to memorize 50 digits backwards and forwards. This is a natural ability that we all have. It just comes from discovering how to actually use your memory. Now, to your point, we all have Google in our pockets. Why do we need memory? And I would argue, well, why do we need to learn anything? It's because Google in your pocket isn't going to allow you to apply and implement what you're doing. And okay, fine. Let's say we're moving towards an economy where everyone's a knowledge worker and no one needs to regurgitate numbers and we all have Google. That's cool. I get that. So most likely what's going to happen is we're moving to a creativity economy. We're moving to a point where human beings, the only real work that's going to be left for us, because manual labor is out the window as soon as robotics advance, is a creativity economy. And what is creativity? It's the ability to look at a situation and draw in ideas, concepts, solutions from a vast body of knowledge in a new and unique way. And in order to do that, you need to have a vast body of knowledge. If you look at the most creative things in our world, whether in the world of art, whether in the world of music, whether in the world of architecture, programming. Creativity comes from someone taking an idea and repurposing it. But in order to do that, you have to be familiar with that idea, and you have to be familiar with what's been done before and how it works. So I would argue the more knowledge you have, the more capacity you have for creativity. And I think we all are moving towards a world in which creativity is our main competitive advantage.
I love that. And so your claim is that having the skill of being able to memorize is an important skill in this creative economy.
Totally. And in this, you know, human service-based economy. Like, I think until we get to the point where robots literally replace us for looking another human being in the eye, and I personally hope we don't get there, but let's just say as entrepreneurs, as business people, as even as employees, like how much better would you be at your job, not you specifically, but you out there, the proverbial you, if you remembered the names of every single person that you cross paths with at a conference, you remembered everything they told you, you remembered their kids' names, you remember what they were struggling with in their business. I spoke in April to Shell and their top 150 salespeople worldwide in the lubricants division. And I asked them, what is the difference between an absolute A player here and someone who doesn't succeed in this role? Is it, you know, aggressive sales tactics? They go, no, the best salespeople here know their client's business better than the client knows. They've read the latest reports from their client's business. They know exactly what's happening, exactly what trends, exactly what the new models and products are. And they can slip in and go, hey, you know, I can't say which clients they have, but hey, so-and-so company, you guys have this new model come out and the engine's going to rev at this RPM. And did you know we have this product? And I read in your prospectus, you've been having a difficulty with, you know, that knowledge, that human element to go, I know your problems, I remember and I care. That's the competitive advantage.
I love that. How much that makes me think, you know, in this hacking mm-hmm. environment we're in, where like one, like what does hack mean anyway? But I think how it can get interpreted is a shortcut. Like we're looking for shortcuts, these ways of how can I just shortcut the process to get the result I want? And when it comes to learning, when it comes to advanced skills, when it comes to a real desire to excel in some area, even if it's just life, I mean, how many hacks are there? I mean, we just have to do the work, right? I mean, and go through the process and go through the trial and error and have the different sources and try to apply and like, oh, I applied it. That actually worked. Or I thought I knew something, but I go to apply it and it didn't work at all. In fact,
but I have some good hacks for you.
Okay.
I do have some good hacks.
So it's like, how do we balance this out where there are great hacks and shortcuts, which can be just really good techniques, which aren't hacks or shortcuts. They're just techniques that are proven. If you do this and that, it's guaranteed to produce result because it's a proven technique, for example, as opposed to this mindset that I can just shortcut my way to life through life without putting real effort into it.
Right. So I agree with you. I think there, you have to draw a differentiation between like a new technique, because I think, look, I think we have to question anything that the masses do, right? It's like if the general populace is doing something, you have to question it, right? So like why people don't stop and question, like, hey, students forget everything they learn after the exam. Like maybe we should do something different, you know, maybe we should be learning differently. But there are, you know, there are so many things that there's just no shortcuts. Like you're not going to learn a language by just passively listening to it. I see people do this all the time. They're like, I'll just listen to Spanish podcasts for 6 months. It's like, no, you won't speak Spanish at the end of that. And there are ways to shorten language learning. When it comes to learning in the brain, the hacks, if you will, are really just a return to the way our brain wants to work. I mean, a million years ago, not only were there not books, we were not learning the kinds of information we're trying to learn now. We were learning the plants and animals in our environment and how to navigate. And so all our information was visual and was connected and was highly engaging. And if we just go back to doing that, right? So when you meet someone, visualize what their name might be, right? So Christina, I might visualize you with a wreath of thorns, Christina Christ, just as an example. And visualize and create these visualizations by doing that and by connecting it to existing knowledge that I have about the word Christina, or Christmas or whatever it might be, creating visualizations and connections allows our brain to do exactly what it wants to do, which is learn about our environment. And most people don't realize, you know, people always tell me, oh, I so wish that I had a photographic memory. And I always say, congratulations, you do. You just don't know how to use it. So you're probably right. That's not a hack. It's a technique and one that you can study that takes time. But once you learn how to create these visual associations and connections, all of a sudden memory becomes easy. And I always joke with people. They're like, oh, you can memorize 50 digits backwards and forwards. That's so impressive. And I go, it wouldn't impress you if you knew how I did it. They're like, what, are you cheating? I'm like, kinda. I'm just reading it. You know, I'm reading it, but I'm not reading it off the piece of paper. I'm reading it out of a memory palace. And then once I teach them how to do it, they go, yeah, you're right. That's not that impressive. It's about as impressive as telling me what, you know, what's behind you on the bookshelf. You just know, the books that you have back there. So,
yeah. And it's the technique or the model or the methodology. Like there are things that work. And sometimes if you can take three unnecessary steps out, then take them out. We want to be as efficient as possible, but sometimes it takes the 10 steps. And it reminds me when I first picked up a Rubik's Cube and I thought, this is impossible. You know, just this, this is ridiculous. But then I learned there's actually a model. There's a whole formula of exactly how to do a Rubik's Cube. And then it's like, whoa, I could do a Rubik's Cube. Just Christina, just average Christina can do a Rubik's Cube. And then it took a while. Like it wasn't an easy model to learn or follow. But once I did, it's like, and people are like, oh my God, you're brilliant. You can just do that Rubik's Cube so fast. Like, well, I'm not telling you, but anybody can do it. Like you just, you just follow the model, right?
Exactly.
So it's, you know, I think so much of that is like, yeah, there's models and techniques for everything. And some we know and some we don't know. Some can be easily learned and some are very complex universal systems that we're trying to figure out what those models are. But at the end of the day, it's about learning. What is the model? What is the technique? What is the information that I need to know?
Right. And that's what gets me is learning is such an important part of our lives from day one until hopefully that's another thing that drives me crazy where people are like, oh, I'm retired. What do I need to learn for? I'm like, keep your brain healthy. I mean, Alzheimer's, dementia, like stave these things off. There is research that shows that the more you learn in old age, but not just that, like learn how to be a great grandparent, learn a new instrument, that instrument you always wanted to learn that language you always want, you know? So in that regard, my dad's awesome. He's learned two languages in retirement, which is so cool to me. But learning such a huge process. Why I don't understand why people never stop or why educators never stop and teach us how to do it and teach us that model, exactly as you said, because then it becomes easy. It becomes fun. I was talking to someone yesterday, one of our coaches, who said that a friend of hers, you know, she was explaining to her about all this stuff and asked her to test her memory. And the woman got a perfect 20 out of 20, memorized 20, a list of 20 random words instantly. And she was like, how did you do that? She's like, oh, well, when I was a kid, a teacher taught me in France actually about this idea called the memory palace. And like, that's what we teach. And she was 6 years old at the time. And to this day, she can memorize 20 random words or anything, you know, 20 people's names, whatever it is. And just like that, it's this lifelong skill that she'll have, which is so cool. So that's why we do what we do.
Well, I love it. Well, you have a book, so share a little bit about your book and why somebody should pick it up.
Yeah, so the latest book is called The Only Skill That Matters, and I've written books before, but I always joke that those are less readable. My previous books were really courses in book form, and I actually worked with Tucker Max and his company, who are amazing at helping take knowledge out and put it in a way that's fun and engaging. So I wanted to, and I think we did it, I wanted to put more information than any of my other books before, but somehow make it an easier and more entertaining read than anything I've ever done before. And we managed to get it down to under 200 pages, so there are no excuses. Even my father-in-law has read it, and it's not his first language. Under 200 pages, a lot of engaging examples, stories, telling a lot of my personal journey and how this stuff has affected me and the people that I've encountered. And I think it's a pretty fun read. Honestly, it seems that the Amazon reviews so far agree with me, but I wanted this to be really accessible. My personal mission is to positively impact a million lives by teaching people how to learn more effectively. And I hope that this book will give me a crack. I know our 14-hour video course not everyone's going to get through that, but this you can read in a few hours and you will forever read faster, remember more, and be able to learn anything that you want.
Well, I will be putting a link to that in the show notes, and I will be the first person in that link to buy because you have me very curious.
Thank you.
All right.
So
well, I like to, you're welcome. You've been magnificent. I could talk to you for hours and hours. So we're reaching our time together, the end of our time together. So I like to close out my podcast by doing a little myth busting.
We tend to
myth bust, you know, throughout all of these conversations, but is there one like big fat lie out there that you bump into all the time that you'd like to bust?
Yes. Oh, thank you for asking. I have a lousy memory, quote unquote. You don't have a lousy memory. And the first thing you need to do to improve your memory is stop saying I have a lousy memory, because the human brain loves to be right and it will do what it needs to confirm you to be right. You don't have a lousy memory. You just don't know how to use it. And I know about 10 world record holding memory champions, and they all started out saying I have a lousy memory.
I love that. Well, thank you. That's a perfect place to wrap. Thank you so much for your time, for your energy, your vibrancy, for your great stories, and for your amazing work. It's been
thank you so much for having me.
To get to know you.
It was a blast. Pleasure was all mine.
If you're inspired by today's show and you would like to learn more about my money coaching, here's what I need you to do. Head over to Kristina.com/call. That's KRISSTINA.com/call, and book an appointment to speak with me. In less than 30 minutes, we will get absolutely clear on why you're not earning enough no matter how hard you work, why you can never get ahead no matter how much you earn, and what you need to know in order to finally have the time and money freedom you're working so hard for. Remember, you're not alone. 95% of Americans are one life event away from financial crisis. I will be the first person to teach you why this is the case and how to be in the other 5% that has no fear around money. No one can do this alone. You need expert help. I've helped everyone from modest earning professionals to those earning 8 figures per year get off the financial hamster wheel and finally win the money game. I look forward to helping you too. Head over to Kristina.com/call and book your call with me today. I'm Kristina Wise. Thank you for spending your valuable attention with me today. We will meet again soon.